Hey, folks, this is Hannes Finney from the Storyworthy Podcast, and we want to thank you for your support. We want to thank you for listening. And you know what? The only way for us to grow is for you to tell your friends, tell your family, tell people you don't even like. We need you to get the word out there about Storyworthy. And we thank you.
We thank you.
We thank you.
Hey, you guys, this episode of Storyworthy is brought to you by GoDaddy. Don't let someone steal your great idea. Register a domain name now and put your idea online. GoDaddy's offering one new or transfer.com for the low price of $2.95. So whether you're building your dream business or starting a website for fun, visit GoDaddy.com and enter the code STORY295 at checkout. Some limitations apply. See website for details. Don't forget, you guys, visit GoDaddy.com and enter the code STORY295 at checkout, and you are supporting this podcast.
This is Jeff Kahn. Look at me. Look at me. Look at me. Fuck you.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finney.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we're coming to you from Pink Cheeks on Ventura Boulevard in Studio City, a full-service waxing salon. We're in the lobby, and there's a big lobby up on the wall. It says anal bleaching. Go ahead and laugh, but, B-U-T-T, some people need it.
Wow. Is that what it, really, it says that?
Yeah, and you know what? Nobody needs it. This is a lie. Nobody needs anal bleaching.
Well, if you are doing some sort of pornography or you are on camera and they are going to light your vagina, I disagree.
No, not vagina. Anal bleaching.
If they are going to light your...
I don't think anuses should change color. If I want to watch pornography with anuses... Not that I ever would. Oh, wait. I totally would. And Jeff is raising his hand. I don't. It's like I'm already in for the anus. Don't have to change the color.
You don't need to change the color of the organ.
Right. Exactly.
I appreciate that you take that path, Hannes, that you're a naturist that way.
I'm a naturist. Well, it's a whole way. Our subject today is.
Our topic today is called King Kong Bush.
Yeah.
And it's brought to us by writer Jeff Kahn. He brings the topic King Kong Bush. And you better believe it, folks. He's talking about grooming downstairs.
Yeah. And we've had this discussion tangentially before. It's like I am old school. It's like, I want there to be a bush.
I know,
it doesn't
Hannes.
Have to be out of control, but the control, the kids today, with the totally removing of the hair, it's just not
so
right.
You are so adamant about this as well, Hannes. You've talked about putting on some sort of a facial mask.
No. I'm talking, you put on a pith helmet with a light.
A pith helmet.
And yeah, because you want to do a little exploring. You don't want everything hanging out there.
I disagree. I don't think downstairs should be neat. It should be tidy. It should be clean.
Yes, clean, not bare.
Let me just say this. I looked into this whole bikini waxing thing.
Uh-huh.
Well, I mean, I've had many bikini waxes myself, but I was looking into the actual history of it. And you know, Hannes, in Middle Eastern societies, removal of the female body hair has been considered proper hygiene for centuries. Now, evidence of pubic hair removal in ancient India dates back to 4,000 and 3,000 BCE.
Yeah, but those are Indian women. Have you smelled them?
Ladies and gentlemen,
wow!
BCE is a term.
You know how much curry they eat?
BCE is a term I actually hadn't heard before. BCE is before the common era. In other words, rather than always saying BC being before Christ, now people are saying BCE before the common era or common era CE. So instead of BC AD, it's BCE.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Why don't you just go get your crotch waxed while men play golf and smoke cigars? Jeez Louise.
Listen, according to ethnologist F. Fawcett, and I don't think they're talking about Farah.
F. Fawcett.
In 1901, he observed the removal of body hair, including pubic hair, about the vulva as a custom of women from the Hindu Nair caste.
And the Nair caste, because they used to use Nair to remove the hair from their vulva.
All right. In Western societies, removal of female body hair is traditionally considered appropriate if it is visible. That makes sense to me.
What? No, that makes sense. Right. No, if you're wearing a bikini and hair is coming out of all the sides, what do they call it? Spider legs.
Ooh.
Okay, that's I made it up. You never heard that?
Heard
yeah,
that
I've heard that. And
I
it's like, that's not good.
The styling of the pubic hair did come into vogue with a bikini. Absolutely.
Yes.
That's the word, yes. Bikini wax.
But I'm still a fan of the bush.
Well,
what can I say? I'm stuck in the
70s. Styles. Okay, so you like au natural. That's what you like.
There should be some effort made. But
so
it's
you
not,
maybe you like trimmed a trimmed bush, which would involve shortening the hair, but not its removal or shaping. The inner thighs, perhaps you like those shaved.
Sure, sure. Who doesn't like a good shaved inner thigh?
What about the triangle or the bikini line? Or actually, just what about the triangle? That's like the bikini line involving the hair removal, the wax from both sides to form like a triangle.
Yeah, they have up on the wall here the various shapes that they can do. And it's like, yeah, I don't care for that. Because we're at the big,
we're at the bikini wax place. American waxing is basically the removal of only the pubic hair exposed by the swimsuit. Of course, depending on the swimsuit.
I can be with that, and after that, it could just be
the hair at the top or the thighs or under the navel. That's not a basic bikini wax. Now, French waxing is when you leave a vertical strip in the front, sometimes called the landing
also they
strip
use a croissant
or the
to
Playboy
do the way they put
strip.
Wax on the croissant. They put a croissant on your crotch, and then they pull the croissant away.
That is so not true, Hannes.
It's so true.
They take warm wax, and they apply it with like the back of a popsicle stick. Then they put a small strip of cloth on it, and then they pull the strip away in the direction the hair grows.
Oh, that's just...
It's a small applicator they use, and it creates a very nice clean line. It's an even line. Then they put a little antiseptic on there, a little bit of powder, and you're good to go.
Right, and then the Russian woman goes, okay, it's good, nice, now you have... The husband be very happy.
Okay, how about the Brazilian?
No, I don't go for this.
Brazilian waxing is the removal of all hair in the pelvic area, the front, the back, sometimes leaving a thin strip of hair on the mons pubis. Mons pubis. How do you say that? On the mons pubis.
Mons pubic.
That's so you're talking about complete removal from the buttocks, that is anything adjacent to the anus, the perineum, the vulva, the labia majora.
Schlamazel, Haas and Pfeffer Incorporated.
They call that the Sphinx, which is after the naked breed of cat.
Wow. You know, I remember a woman I knew once telling me, some Vietnamese woman was doing it. She was like, she was trying to explain it. She's like, doggy style. Just so that she could get to the, she wanted her to sit.
I see.
Or kneel, I should say, in the position. There's different positions
that you have to get into.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, bikini wax, here's the good news, folks.
Yeah.
Is it's very fast and it's very inexpensive. I mean, if you want somebody to take the wax away from your, it's like $18, $20.
Really?
Yeah, it's not expensive at all. And it's like 10 minutes of your life. But it hurts like a motherfucker.
Yeah, I can only imagine. I have not ever been waxed. And I one of these things where you're like, oh, I'm glad I was born a man.
Now,
I don't have to wax.
Remember in the 40-year-old virgin,
I can just
virgin,
trim a little bit.
Steve Carell had his chest waxed.
Yes.
And I remember reading that he really did have it waxed on camera.
Yeah, yeah.
And that it was as painful as it looked.
Yeah, and he was bleeding. And it's like, yeah. I mean, I have to imagine if you were as hairy as him and you were really going to do that, that you would trim all that hair very short first. I think
now,
the real problem,
wrong,
I don't
honest,
know if that's right or wrong.
And the same with between bikini waxes. You want to go 6 to 8 weeks because the longer the hair, the better the pool.
I didn't know that.
See, oh, Hannes, there's so much to learn.
Wow, this just sounds like...
You have
like,
to get a mani, a pedi, a bikini. It all goes together.
Yeah, well, yeah, I remember when, was our friend of the show, Sharon Houston. I was going to share Sharon Stone, Sharon Houston. Said to you when you were back on the market, it's like you gotta tidy up the package.
She said you gotta take care of downstairs if you're gonna date in this town.
Yeah,
and you know what? I don't date in this town. That's the problem.
I know.
The email address is info@storyworthypodcast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter @storyworthy. Have you ever been over there, Hannes, to the Twitter?
Oh, the Twitter, Storyworthy, yes. And I try to, my tweets, which I try to put up, I always put Storyworthy as a part of the thing, so that if you follow Storyworthy, you also get my tweets.
Right? Why?
On a rare occasion.
What is the problem with the Twitter, Hannes? I mean, you've been stuttering.
I go back and forth. It's like I go and like I'm doing it for like a day or a week, and then it just falls out of my.
I've never seen you tweet more than 2 days in a row.
Yeah.
And what happens? You don't.
It just it's so unnatural to me.
I see.
I try. Yeah. It's literally like turning. You know how it takes 7 hours to turn an ocean liner. To turn a giant ship, it takes a long time. I'm a giant ship.
All right, you guys. So stay tuned wherever you are because Jeff Kahn is on his way here. Next time on Storyworthy, we have animator John Mathot.
And I'll be talking about the time that I almost destroyed the Fox Broadcasting Network with food poisoning.
That's next time on Storyworthy.
It's Kira Sultanovich, and you're listening to Storyworthy, but you knew that.
And we're back. We have left the Pink Cheeks on Ventura Boulevard and wandered down the street to Brat Brothers, which has nothing to do with hair removal, but they have brats. And so we're having some brats.
What a nice thing to do. After you have a bikini wax, treat yourself
sure,
to a brat.
Sure. Hey, your crotch is on fire. Have a pork sausage.
And the shape of the meat will remind you why you went through that pain.
Right, right. Exactly. And if you have the sizzling, yes, sizzling pork fat, that pain will also remind you that, hey, there is a pain worse.
How much is the anal bleaching, Hannes? I'm just curious.
I believe it's $26.
See, that's a fair price to somebody if you want them to do that, I think.
Yeah, I feel like I would want to charge more. I'd be like, I feel like this whole, again, you're like $18 for the waxing. It's like, that's like going to a discount dentist. I want to pay a premium price if anybody's waxing my genitals.
All right, you guys, Jeff Kahn is here right now. He is a producer and a writer. He co-wrote the book, You Say Tomato, I Say Shut Up.
Shut up.
His wife, Annabelle Gurwitch. And boy, oh boy, was that a humorous book.
That was a damn humorous book among the various peoples.
And right now, Jeff is doing something new. It's called Lust Out Loud. So if you have any questions at all about sex or fetishes, you can send those Twitter questions over to Lust Out Loud. Folks, wherever you are, please put your hands together for Jeff Kahn.
I didn't have a steady girlfriend in high school. This dubious distinction left me free to engage in my primary high school objective, getting hand jobs from anybody else besides me. And that is precisely why, after I entered the University of Wisconsin-Madison, I decided to grow up, meet someone great, fall in love, and have a real relationship. I first caught sight of Helen at Merlin's, a legendary nightclub that brought in such unknown bands as New Order, XTC, and an obscure quartet from Ireland whose energetic young lead singer sported a nifty mullet called U2. Helen, a half-Chinese, half-Puerto Rican beauty from the Bronx, dressed like she just stepped out of an MTV video, complete with red suspenders on extra-tight stonewashed jeans and a hot Joan Jett early 80s shag hairdo, I was instantly smitten. As she sipped her drink, effortlessly ignoring the creme de la cheeseheads of Wisconsin's new wave wannabes vying for her attention, Helen seemed untouchable. In order to stand apart from the other post-punk posers, I took on the persona of Jimmy, a plucky British lad who said things I imagine British blokes would say, like, "I got me a flat not too far from here, love," and "Can I get this next dance with you, me beauty?" Or, "You're not like the other tots to come around here, are you, darling?" Right. After I felt secure enough with Helen to drop the Brit act, she told me that although she found chatting up an English guy endearing, she liked talking to the real me better. I was ecstatic that she preferred Jeff the Jew to Jimmy the Limey. From the very outset, Helen made it clear that if I wanted her to be my girlfriend, I had to earn it. She may have hailed from the tough borough of the Bronx, but that didn't mean she was going to jump into bed with me just because I could do a crappy Cockney accent. If I wanted the keys to the Chinese Puerto Rican kingdom, I had to prove I could be trusted with them. I was very game for this game. As I said, I had graduated from hormonally hopped up high school hand jobs to wanting a genuine girlfriend, someone interesting, exciting, and sexy, someone exactly like Helen. As Indian summer faded into frostbitten fall, just before the onset of freeze-your-balls-off Wisconsin winter, I set about winning Helen's new wave heart. We went on dates, caught little-known bands at Merlin such as the Go-Go's and the Violent Femmes, drank cheap regional brews like Leinenkugel's, smoked Camel Lights, and talked to 2 a.m. before Helen sent me home with a heartfelt kiss on the cheek. I left content in the knowledge that I was finally making a mature commitment to someone I cared for before diving face first into sex. One crispy autumn night, after seeing yet another new band, this one calling themselves REM, we kissed very passionately. When Helen whispered she thought she was falling in love with me, it made my spine tingle. So this was what grown-up love felt like. Sweet, thoughtful, dignified. I was making my final approach to a mature relationship after so many years toiling in the shallows of adolescent lust. The very next afternoon, Helen arrived at my cookie-cutter off-campus apartment, and without delay, we began fooling around, speedily shedding our clothes and falling into bed. This was it, the moment I had been waiting for since the second I laid eyes on her, Helen in the flesh, to be kissed, touched, fondled, and beheld in all her splendid glory. My heart raced like the crashing guitars of the Clash, and butterflies spun in my stomach like the swirling vocals of a Cure song. And then, with a slight arch in the small of her back and the rise of her legs to allow me to remove her panties, it all died. I don't mean to be rude or crude or mean-spirited in any way, but never, ever have I experienced anything like this before or since. Helen's pubic hair was an amorphous, thick mass, as dense, as black, as ever-expanding as the universe itself. It shot out in every direction as if seeking to explore each and every part of her body. Up the belly to the button and beyond, down the sides and into the thighs, through the back and out the crack, spreading forth with the ceaseless, incoherent intensity of suburban sprawl, only angrier. All the blood promptly rushed out of my dick and cascaded into deep wellsprings of neuroses I never thought I had. I tried hard to put it out of my mind and fulfill what now felt more like a moral obligation than authentic desire. But the hair was so coarse, so Brillo pad scratchy, so voluminously matted that I didn't think I could ever snake my way through it. It was unimaginable. For the first time in my life, I didn't want to have sex. I, Jeff Kahn, the little lord of Lustenberg. Helen either didn't notice my epic despair, panic, and sheer terror, or misinterpreted my sudden, egregious physical immobility as a sweet, forgivable, yet paralyzing shyness. Whatever the case, she took over. I closed my eyes with the religious fervor of a monk and let Helen have her way with my body while my mind wandered off to ponder the thesis for my upcoming Russian lit paper on Dostoevsky's The Idiot. Afterward, Helen held me tenderly in her ironically hairless arms, but I was more like a cat whose temporary stillness was merely a deceptive ploy as he plotted his inevitable escape. Yes, I had to get away from hip, smart, gorgeous Helen and her King Kong bush. Not that it was her fault. It was just the way her body was made. I was the jerk who, after working so hard to prove himself worthy of her love, was now freaking out so badly about her impenetrable, forested crotch that I was seriously contemplating transferring colleges. I wasn't any better than I had been in high school. I was worse, much worse. If I had been more mature and less fixated on the superficial, who's to say that Helen and I wouldn't have found true love? We got along famously, shared the same taste in music and clothes. She even told me she was falling in love with me. All my new friends in Madison were baffled I could even speak to a woman as beautiful as Helen, let alone have sex with her. I knew I was being a supreme asshole. I knew I should not screw up this fantastic chance at a truly meaningful connection. But the dread of running into Helen in her dark abyss of vaginadom had me circumventing her at every turn. I stopped answering my phone, relying on the only great technological innovation of the early 80s, the answering machine. I took circuitous routes to my classes to avoid bumping into her. When she knocked at my apartment door, I pretended not to be home. I even stopped going to Merlin's, missing such small-time 80s bands as The Police and The Pretenders. After a while, Helen's phone messages, full of confusion, despair, and eventually resentment, subsided. I exhaled with relief that I had safely managed to mangle things between us for good. Months later, when I finally did run into her at the student union, she was, big surprise, cold to me. She had a new boyfriend, Boyd, who seemed completely enamored. Seeing him affectionately put his arms around her made me feel somewhat less like a huge sack of shit. Mm-hmm. That summer, I stayed in Madison to take a couple of light summer semester classes, existentialism and Scandinavian cinema, and the Dark Ages, fall of Rome to the Black Death. When I happened upon Boyd, he told me he and Helen had broken up. Sadly, she dropped out of college and returned to the Bronx to recover from a very serious coke habit. Boyd said he felt kind of responsible since he was not only her coke-headed boyfriend, but also her dealer. I, too, felt guilt-ridden. Did my ungracious flight from Helen's hairy down-under propel her into the clutches of Boyd and his blow? I told him if he ever spoke to her to give her my best, and he just laughed and told me that Helen hated my guts and thought I was a total a-hole. I knew Boyd was right. I was horrible to Helen. Yet, even as I inwardly acknowledged my atrocious behavior and hoped that someday she might forgive me, my mind's eye kept flashing vivid images of Helen's deep, dark, heart of darkness jungle, and I was truly grateful I had managed to escape its wild and hairy wrath.
How many times were you with her?
Just a couple.
Just a couple? Yeah. See, he did go back.
Yeah, see, he makes it sound like the one time and he disappeared. But a guy always goes back.
Well, I kind of got bullied into the next time with her.
You mean she took the reins?
Or she really took the reins, but that was the last time.
Was it a date?
Yeah, she just sort of came over to the Roundhouse, and which is where I was living.
Yeah.
What's the Roundhouse? It wasn't a fraternity, was it?
No, it was near fraternities, though.
So what was the Roundhouse?
The Roundhouse was off campus.
We went to the same college, so I'm trying to recall.
It was on Langdon Street. It was near the student union. And then when I finally got a roommate, my best friend, Evan Gore.
Who I've known since the first grade. Yes, exactly.
Moved in. This fraternity was so close that when we finally collected enough garbage from our eighth floor balcony, we threw it off into their frat.
Nice.
And you did that because? Because
I just hated them.
You hated the fraternity.
Because I hated frats.
They really were. Frats in Madison are the stereotypical douchebag conglomerations that you think they are.
They are. They are
exactly the definition of douchebag frats.
Assholes. Yeah.
They were assholes. And it started because I was wearing these Madras shorts.
I like the a Madras plaid.
I don't know what that is.
And I was walking past a frat and I heard like, a nice shorts, faggot.
Yeah.
And
nice.
I was like, you're going to get a lot of trash over the next
But you could have been wearing a three-piece suit and they would have said, nice three-piece suit, faggot.
Yeah, yeah. They
you could have been wearing their frat sweatshirt.
Perhaps, yes.
Hannes, let's talk about, so you and Jeff did go to the same school.
Yes, and actually Merlin's, I looked up, I was not a, I
music
knew the
person.
Name, but I was not a music person, but I looked up and there's a picture of it from 1982 or something, and it is right next to Zorba's Urals.
Yes.
That I remember distinctly, a great Euro place.
Like
sure.
Heroes? Are you talking
Euros,
like the,
yeah.
Heroes, some people would call them gyros, and they're wrong
one.
And stupid.
I
yeah.
see.
But they're Euros, yes.
That was one.
That was a great place.
That was.
And see, in the Midwest, Euro places are run by actual Greeks, whereas here they're run by any ethnicity except Greeks and don't eat a Euro on the West Coast.
They
were really good, but painful to digest.
Yeah. That venue, Merlin's, I can't even get over it. Now, how many people did that seat?
Mostly, I would say like 150, and not seating, just standing.
150 people at a bar.
At most.
It was a bar.
It was a little bit of a bar. They had one pool table, and then they had a stage. I saw like
you
two, flock of seagulls there.
REM.
I saw the Violent Femmes. Romeo Boyd. I saw other bands that I didn't.
Well, here is REM's set list from Merlin's 1981.
This is gonna be all
it's
off
on
murmur.
Thing.
I know
it's
it.
A set one. Sitting Still, Mystery to Me, Carnival of Sorts.
Radio
set two, Ages of You, 1 Million.
You're killing me.
Yeah, and it's like this is – yeah, it's like everybody played Merlin.
I saw Echo and the Bunnymen there.
Wow.
That was a great concert.
That album, Murmur, still holds up.
Yeah, it does.
And so does The Document. That holds up as well.
Yeah, now I feel like the first one holds up better than all of them.
Murmur holds, yeah, because – but a lot of times that happens. But also with first albums, doesn't that happen a lot, Jeff, also with first books? It's hard to live up to that because that first album or book or piece of art took so long to get out there.
Well, a novelist – and I'm beginning to meet more people who are writers like that. I mean, novelists – I met this guy. He wrote Fraction of the Whole. He's an Australian writer.
Yeah.
It took him over 10 years to write – his first novel, Fraction of the Whole. It's unbelievably great.
So good.
It's so good. And so he's writing a second novel. I was like, so how long is that taking? He goes, 5.
5 years?
And it's still, and I don't know if he's done yet.
Right, and it'll be half the time, and then people will be like, well, it's not as good, and he'll be like, it only took 5 years!
Well, let me ask you about Lust Out Loud. Now, that's going to be a book.
No, the book is called Lust and Found.
Okay, Lust and Found. I love that title.
Yes, that's the title. I'm going to self-publish that book, and that was already taken on Twitter. So.
Much like you would self-pleasure yourself back in the 1980s.
Yes.
Lust and Found, but on Twitter it's at Lust Out Loud.
Yes.
And so what kind of questions are you looking for?
Oh, you know, is it anything about anal sex, rimming,
rimming?
Licking the butthole.
That's the licking of the
thing.
Yeah, interesting. A rim job, I believe they call it.
Yeah.
And which would be a job.
Or rimming.
Sure.
It would be quite a
anything. I mean, any question.
It all seems
about
to be anal related, not just the anus.
No, I mean clits. Anything you want to talk about?
How
any
are
questions
you
have? Like, you know, I think somebody asked me. I've got a couple. Like, is squirting? Is it real?
I've heard a lot about this. Tell me.
I think that it is. I think it's actually it's real.
Female ejaculate.
Yeah.
I hear it's very messy and then you need a towel. Is that true?
I think if you don't need a towel and it's not messy.
You haven't done it right.
You're not doing it right.
Yeah.
Interesting. Would you agree that oral sex is better without so much hair?
Yes.
I agree too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't wax my chest because I was afraid after the 40-year-old virgin thing, because I hear that it's incredibly painful,
right,
for this top part of the chest and in the belly, that it's really, really, it's like crazy pain.
Mm-hmm.
But I did like the little patch on my back.
You had a patch of hair on your back?
Yeah,
and then you
on
got
the
it
lower back.
Okay, and it's gone.
It's gone, yeah.
It
been
it like
replaced
a
by
stamp?
A Chinese symbol.
Yes.
Yes.
Now I wear a thong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, are
always
you going with the tag, the Little Lord of Lustenberg?
Am I going with that?
Is that your tag for Lust Out Loud?
No.
I am, in fact, the Little Lord of Lustenberg.
No, that's just no. Maybe I should.
Jeff, you have so many funny little words that you say. I mean,
I have funny
phrases,
little words. That's
and
what I
so
do.
You write these stories, and then you just must chip it away and chip it away until every word seems very important. Very.
They're like
funny
little diamonds.
Well, I think that's what writers do.
Right. that's the idea.
I believe you're describing writing.
I think what you're saying is this is what the writing process is.
Like,
I'm actually teaching writing now, and I'm trying to tell them.
Yeah, it's like we have a comedian. It's like, you know, you do this thing where you say a sentence that it makes me laugh at the end. He goes, yes, that's a joke. Yes.
I always say that when we're playing tennis. I say, just hit it. It's like tennis.
Yes, it's like tennis. Go ahead.
Keys
no,
to the
sorry
Puerto
for
Rican
later.
Kingdom?
Yeah.
Keys to the Puerto Rican Kingdom.
Chinese Puerto Rican Kingdom.
And so are there any other
Yeah,
kingdoms?
What if that had something to do with the lack of grooming was the two cultures, both of which are, I would think, hairy.
I don't think the Chinese is hairy. I don't think that's it.
True.
I guess Asian women do have a lot of pubic hair.
So maybe she
hair.
Had
yeah,
Chinese
Yeah, judging by what I've seen
thing.
On the interweb, there's a
she
lot of pubic
Chinese
hair.
Chinese arms. And
but right, and
yeah,
then a Puerto Rican undercarriage.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you do think that men should also be removing their pubic hair. Am I right?
I think that trimming is good. I'm a trimmer.
Yeah,
I'm a manscaper.
Yeah, I think a manscaper.
Yeah, trimming is fine.
Good.
Yeah, and that woman
my wife doesn't like
trim.
It because whatever I do, she won't like anyway.
Why?
You know, so.
Why is that?
Because that's the kind of marriage we have.
Your beautiful wife Annabelle Gurwitch is very successful in her own right, and she has a new book out.
I would
called
say more successful in her own right.
And she's very successful, and she has a new book out, and it is called "I See You've Made an Effort."
Right.
And it's a collection of essays.
That could certainly refer to manscaping or trimming.
Yeah, you make an effort in that department.
She means herself.
Oh, I see.
I made an effort.
She's like on the edge of 50, and so she's writing
She's writing about turning 50 and what it's like to be a woman turning 50 in our culture now.
I know what that's like. I'm
50
going
is
to know
the new 43.
Like.
She doesn't believe that.
I don't believe that
She doesn't
either.
Believe that. She says that, you know, 40 is the new 30, 50 is still 50.
Yeah.
That's her thesis.
I saw a cartoon once, a guy standing over his mother's grave, and he says, "Mother, I just heard, dead is the new 80.
Right, yes.
But I don't think so, right?
No, dead is still dead.
And 50 is 50.
And 50 is still 50, yeah.
And it's tricky, isn't it?
I don't know if it's tricky, but I mean, it's definitely 50.
But acknowledging
I'm 51.
It and being comfortable with it.
I'm acknowledging it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm owning it.
You're owning it, and that's why you're coming out with Lesson Found.
Coming out.
So this isn't like this hasn't been a repressed sexual thing. You just said, "I'm 50. I'm going to talk about it."
Well, I thought that what I was thinking when I was thinking about this book was that when I was thinking about the narrative of my life, the flow, the scope of it after 50 years, I thought the best way to tell the story of that life that I have led, connecting the dots, was all through lust. That lust was not a sin or something to be ashamed of, but lust was actually the creative force of my life. It's the genesis of everything creative that burst forth from me.
However, you can't really act on that lust because you're married.
But lust isn't acting. Lusting is about thinking.
Okay.
To me, lust is about thinking. What you're thinking.
Well, lust can be anything. I mean, first of all, the book starts when I was 9 years old, and I was on this vacation with my family in Charleston, South Carolina, to see my relatives there. And I was pawned off on a 12-year-old, my cousin Joel, and he took me up to his room and he said, "I have something to show you." And he took out this this porn book, this black and white pornography book, and he gave it to me. I was 9, and I looked at it, and my life was never the same after that.
Right.
It was a black and white book of people having sex in a library.
Wow,
that
what
is extra hot
message.
Somehow.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was very interesting because I was like, "Where is the librarian?" And if people are not supposed to talk in a library, how are they managing to do this?
Like on a card catalog.
Yes, I mean, like going up trying to get a book on a shelf with a ladder and getting a blowjob through the ladder
rungs.
Wow.
Yes.
Rungs. I didn't know whether to run down and hug my mom and cry, but I just couldn't stop turning.
You didn't
those
know
pages.
Whether you wanted to read or masturbate.
I didn't know about masturbation. That's a little. You know,
you wanted to masturbate with a book.
I just couldn't
a
stop
thick
looking
book.
At it.
But well, I have to say, all guys have a cousin who has stuff. My cousin, who lived next door to us, had an entire file cabinet.
Yes.
Of 70s pornography. Speaking of bushes.
Yes, there was
70s,
there was,
which was not vintage at the time. It was. Of
it
its
was
time.
Of its time, yeah. Because I went to summer camp, and that's the next sort of, you know, magazine-infested masturbatory.
Yeah, you don't – if you're – you know, these damn kids today don't understand what their iPhones – you didn't used to be able to just pull up free porn wherever the hell you wanted.
Yeah, but
no, you
always
have
your memory.
You
I
have
mean,
to
you've
earn
always,
the porn.
But you've always been able to draw upon your own thoughts.
You
I mean, that's
not when you're 9.
No, you don't have thoughts at 9. Well, that's not true. Let me say that I used to always imagine in my head what girls look like naked. Well, an earlier memory, even before the porno mag, was I was in second grade. And this is all.
We're all going to go to hell for hearing this story.
Okay, so there I see this girl in my class, Tammy, a Greek girl, Antiochus, I believe, And she motions me and my friend Jimmy Runco. She tells us,
Jimmy Runco.
Jimmy Runco, come into the coat room.
Closet. Yeah.
Yeah. And we come in there and she lifts her dress up and pulls down her panties. And we got on our knees and like little mini gynecologists went to town looking at that, you know, checking it out.
And how old were you? You were 7.
Yeah, I was in second grade.
I'm terrified.
Yeah, it was fascinating,
Jeff,
to me. I'll never forget it.
But listen, this is where it all breaks down for me because I have a 7-year-old little girl. Now, I know you have a 15-year-old son.
16.
So how, wow, he's 16.
Yes.
So how has this been going down the last 6 years with him and you knowing this is what he's going through?
He doesn't talk to me about that.
Well, I understand, but you know in your head what's happening.
Yeah, I know what's – well, I know – I don't really know because they have a different way of doing things.
Have you searched his browser?
No.
Good. Yes, you have.
Searched other things.
You have.
Yeah.
I can see much in your eyes.
Well, if he searched your browser, he would probably find things
horrifying. I'm much more worried about marijuana, smoking the weed than I am about pornography and sex with him.
Because there's so much weed out here.
Yes. And he just seems to be much more interested in weed than he is in pussy.
And you were very interested in weed, though, when you were younger.
No, I was more interested in pussy.
I see.
Always.
I see. And the problem with the marijuana is, I mean, I'm a big advocate.
She really says the.
The marijuana. That's exactly the right.
She's trying to make it sound old school.
Yeah. The marijuana is that, and I'm a big proponent. I'm a big weed smoker every day. However, at the age of 16,
not good.
They say that the brain keeps developing until the mid 20s,
yes.
And that's why you really can't smoke the pot.
The pot. There it is.
Under 25. Yeah. Under 20.
Well, you know what? I'm just trying. It's not going to happen because they all do, and I'm trying my best. You know, to curb it. To curb his enthusiasm.
Yes, for the...
Everybody's doing it. It's very accessible, and they like it. I liked it.
Yeah, first time I ever smoked pot, I like had my first anxiety attack ever.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, that did not make me want to be like, oh, I would like to... Also, I came from a crazy family, so it was like, anything that will make me out of control... That doesn't sound like a good thing to me.
That was
my phobia.
I know that. I know that feeling of being anxious. I went to a Beach Boys concert in Saratoga Performing Arts Center when I was 13.
Yeah.
And my friend and I bought 2 joints from some hippie dude. And I had tried it before, but I didn't get high. So we decided we'll smoke the one each.
Right.
I'm still high. I am still wandering around Saratoga Performing Arts Center, not listening to Bob or Ann at all, hungry, hallucinating. I don't know how I got home.
Wow, that's amazing.
Let me say that you are a very healthy man now because I've been to Jeff Kahn's house once, and that was for the Packers, not 49ers, playoff game.
Yeah,
heartbreaking game. And I've never been there before. I'm like, oh, well, I should bring something. And I say, or I don't know if I – tweeted or if I texted you, but was like, I can bring pizza or I can make fried chicken. What do you know? He's like, you bring what you want. I'll have my own stuff. I get there. This fucking asshole is baking his own kale chips.
Oh, wow.
He's eating. I'm like some kind of scumbag Wisconsin moron. I got some chicken wings. He's eating fucking homemade kale chips.
And it is a football game. I mean,
it is a football game. And I'm looking at him like, oh, dude. And by the way, I had one. Not bad.
No, they're very good.
Not bad. But I'm like, oh, look, just tell me that you don't allow fried food in your house.
So is alcohol a problem?
I felt like I had brought. Oh, it was all wrong.
Is alcohol a problem with a teenager?
No, I don't think alcohol is a problem with teenagers. Not out here. I mean, maybe it is back east. I don't know. I mean, I drank a lot more than I think that he does. He's not really interested in drinking.
That's good news.
Maybe because he sees me, because alcohol is still not a problem with me. So
yeah, no, but I mean, that's good news.
I guess so. But I think for the brain, you know, that marijuana, they're saying it's really bad.
At that age.
And I don't see it doing great things for him. I mean,
he's
definitely, I mean, this is a tough time of life.
Yeah. My fear, though, is alcohol in driving. with my daughter. That's a big fear I have. And now that your son, is he going to get a driver's license?
Not interested in driving.
A lot of kids are not interested in driving.
It's a little weird for a guy who grew up in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they have social media. It's not anymore.
Or is it weird because, you know, he sees driving it. It's like, who would want to drive in Los Angeles?
All right, and the money involved.
Well, God, I know. It took me an hour and 45 minutes to get here today. And it's like I'm thinking to myself, where are the helicopters? I was promised as a child.
Because as I was driving here. I thought, you guys have moved from 2 minutes from my house to helicopter range.
I know. You could land in LAX and get there closer than walking across the street because you live right across the street from me. I know that. So, but regarding your son, he doesn't want to drive. Is that partly because of social media?
You know, I think there's a little bit
That's a good theory, actually. I like that.
I think you're right because I think all of these things are factors into an arrested development of teen boys, at least teen boys that I know, who are skateboarding, and they, you know, I wanted to get the fuck out of Albany.
Right.
And as soon as I turned 16, I wanted to drive, and I wanted to get to college. I wanted to go far away. I wanted to go to Madison. My parents didn't understand that. And I was like, well, you can't visit me on the weekends there. And it's like, I wanted to get out and start like a life away. And he's... As much as he fights with us and argues and is a prick, I don't think he's just like, it's all happening so fast. You know, I'm going to be 18 soon. How did this happen? And that's the opposite of me.
Yeah.
That was the opposite. Yeah. I was like, I can't wait.
Well, but to be fair, Jeff, I mean, your son is growing up in one of the loveliest neighborhoods in the country. The weather is perfect.
Right.
He can Twitter away and he can text his friends all day long. He can be on Facebook. He has a social network of people around him. So really, where is there to go when you're kind of already living in a great place?
Well, you know, what's good about Ezra is at least he hates L.A. So I'll give him that much. Like he says he's over L.A. and I'm like, thank God.
So where do you want him to go? New York?
Well, he's already... did a month at Columbia in a sort of a high school college program last summer.
Wow.
And he loved it. He's familiar with New York. So, you know, like, but what the asshole that he is, this is so teenage. So he comes back from New York after spending a month there and he's all ragging on LA and how ugly it is and how ridiculous and stupid it is. And, and he looks to me and he goes, you know, Dad, I really miss the city.
And
I said, come, look at me. Fuck you. No, I mean, look at me. Fuck off. You missed the city month away.
Yeah,
now,
1 month in
Manhattan. Now go skateboard, you fucking L.A.
Yeah, you missed the city because we're supporting you. And why don't you go get a job and live above a Chinese restaurant in the Bronx?
If you're lucky.
See how much you love the city.
Oh, yeah, boy. I find parenting, you know, I'm getting into a lot of this bargaining kind of a thing. And I try to, like, have my daughter's chore chart and things she has to do. And she has to hit these marks or she loses these privileges.
It's
but
hard,
really,
huh?
At the end of the day, it's really like a bargain, you know? It's like, look, man, if you work with me, I will work with you, and we can get this done.
It's all gone in adolescent.
Well, let me just say this. As tough as this is for you guys, you are paying attention to your children and are interested. And I feel like my parents were barely interested in me. And I didn't realize until much later how much that pissed me off, that they were barely interested. That they were like, I remember doing comedy in Madison. And like we got our people together from the Comedy Cellar, and we're gonna go. We did another college in Whitewater. Remember UW Whitewater?
Yeah. No, I've been to Whitewater.
Yeah. And it's like, and we're going to the University of Wisconsin Milwaukee, where my mother worked.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, hey, you know, we're gonna do it. And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, oh, I gotta tell her we're coming and we're gonna do the show. But really, the fact that she showed up for 5 minutes at the back of the room, watched, and left was like. Now I realize, I'm like, wait a minute. I fucking came back here semi-triumphantly. I'm part of this touring show. I mean, it was nothing, but
still,
it should have been like, this is going to be great, and my son's going to be here, and I'll tell all these people, and nothing.
Hannes, it's still like that with my family. They think this show is called Story World.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, in other words, you're never going to get, if you're looking for that kind of approval,
Hannes,
it's never going to happen.
Hannes, look at me.
Yeah.
Hannes, look at me.
Yeah.
I'll be your daddy now.
Wow.
All right.
Do you have any questions about anal bleaching? Honest,
yes.
Anything?
Yes. No. My daddy doesn't eat kale. Look at me. Fuck you. Look at me. Fuck you.
Yeah, that's but you want a daddy,
though. Yeah, that, by the way, that should be the name of your next book. Look at me. No, look at me. No, no, no. Look at me. Fuck you.
Fuck you.
That's,
yeah.
Hey, Jeff, you want to play some Shotgun Storyworthy?
Okay, let's go for it.
That music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the Storyworthy Wheel of Truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
Virginity. Okay, I actually lost my virginity at pretty old for a guy that was having as much hand jobs as I was at 17. I had this girl. I love sluts. I love them, and I worship sluts. And I'm a pro slut guy. And if anybody says anything bad about sluts, including my son, I say, you say something bad about sluts, look at me, fuck you. Sluts are great. So Wendy was this great slut, and she was just cute and Jewish, and she had already lost her virginity, in Israel, 20 years ago. And we went out on Halloween, and not really went out, but just smoked cigarettes and drank. And at the end of the night, she turned to me and she said, I've really always liked you. And I was like, really? And she said, are you a virgin? And I said, yeah, I am. And she goes, let's do something about that. And I was like, fucking great Halloween. What's happening here? And so she was like, she was kind of a punk rocker too. She was a cool punk rocker chick. And then she took me into her bedroom. Her parents were never home. In the 70s, parents were never home. They were never, never, never home. You could do anything you want. Where were the parents? They disappeared. They were never home. So I'm finally fucking somebody. And I realized that all the buildup about virginity is a little bit of a letdown. It is not the greatest thing on earth. And that, it just didn't blow my mind. And it was like, I looked down at Wendy at one point and it looked like she was actually reading a book. She wasn't into it either. And I was like, I don't know why this isn't so great. And she said, well, don't worry, it'll be great in a second. And she rolled me over and she gave me like my first blowjob. And on the other hand, was unbelievable. And when I came, it felt as if my soul was coming out of my penis and shooting into the universe. And it was unbelievable. So, and I love Wendy forever because of that.
Yeah. And where can we follow Wendy at? Is she?
Wendy's at I Hate Jeff Con.
Right.
Stop talking about me.
She's at, hey, at Jeff Con, look at me. Fuck you.
Hey, listen.
I still love Wendy and I'm still in contact
that
with her.
That story has to be in Lesson Found,
yes,
right?
Yes, it's in the book. Yeah.
That is tremendous. Wow.
Because I walked home late that night and I was so in bliss.
Yeah.
And I got in well after curfew. And my parents, who were home more than regular parents, were waiting for me,
wow,
like at 2 a.m. My father was just livid, and he just was screaming at me and yelling, and I didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
Now, listen,
I was like, that's okay.
A father should have been able to look at you not giving a shit and gone, oh, I get it.
I get what happened.
I know what happened.
Now, you were 17 years old. That's only a year away for your son then.
Right.
If it were to – do you think he's a virgin?
I do think he's a virgin.
And what kind of conversation, can you have any conversation with him about this, or how does that go down?
He doesn't really like talking about it. He thinks it makes him uncomfortable, and I don't want to make him uncomfortable.
Of course it does.
But I mean, he knows I am the little lord of Lustingburg, and he knows I'm a perv.
Oh, he knows his parents.
He knows, and he thinks
reads
he's
your
just
stuff.
Like, oh, God, Dad.
Yeah. Do you think you'll know when that happens for him?
I think I'm going to notice something.
Yeah.
You know?
Because I know.
You know what
I
they
think...
say? They say that, oh, I've hooked up with her 5 times. I'm like, what do you mean hooked up? You mean made out, right, Ezra? You hooked up is making out. Yeah, that's what it means. Yeah.
Right, it doesn't mean anything more
than
that.
Hooking up, that's a big
know.
Deal, right?
Yeah.
Look at me. Fuck you.
Let me talk about King
I'll
Kong
talk about,
with you,
I'll
son.
Talk about hooking up.
That's right.
Yeah.
You can follow me on Twitter, son.
Yeah, follow me on... No, don't.
Lust Out Loud. Yeah, no, so now these questions are going to start coming in to Lust Out Loud.
Oh, God.
At Lust Out Loud.
Right.
And Ezra can see that.
Yes, but he'd have to like look at the Lust Out Loud stuff.
I can't imagine any 16-year-old boy being that interested in anything
his parents are doing at all.
Yeah.
At all.
It is weird to seem almost erased. I feel that with my daughter at school. I feel like I'm merely the driver. I mean, I'm nothing more than
the driver.
That's
what I am. I am his chauffeur, I'm invisible. But the fact that I'm funny, I am a hit with his friends.
Yeah.
And that kind of bothers him.
Oh.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, right. Which probably makes you want to be even more entertaining. Like, and you probably don't.
Because he'll say he'll say this. He'll say, oh, yeah, he's funny to you. You don't have to live with him.
But wait a minute. I would think the opposite, though, that he would think you're cool.
He does think I'm cool, but he can't think I'm cool to his friends.
Right.
And he certainly doesn't. Would never say I'm cool to my face.
Right.
He'll say to me, I'll say, you got a C in your math test? And he goes, hey, Dad, how many scripts have you sold this year?
Oh, Jesus, hurts, man.
He hurts, huh? He goes
motherfucker.
For it.
Yeah. I'm going to swear at him now.
Yeah, tell me about
it. Wow, that's tough.
Get used to it. Well, yeah. I'm sure your kid will be sweet.
My daughter, she'll definitely roll her eyes a lot.
But again, you guys are not invisible. You're part of the world existing. See, if your kid is paying too much attention to try and get your attention, that means you're not doing it right.
That's right.
Yeah,
you're a building block. You're a pillar.
When do you think about
the pillar? When do you think about your car? Do you think about the tires on your car, except if they blow up? No.
Right.
Well, in the scheme of things, I'm very happy to be a mother. I'm happy to have a child, and I'm happy that I am so in her life, because it does seem like in the 70s, everybody just split.
Where did they go?
I don't know.
Yeah.
But kids were home after school. I remember getting stoned after school for hours, getting stoned with my best friends, Kimmy Eddy and Cheryl Neugebauer, and playing Dust in the Wind on my guitar. I mean, it just all broke down.
God, that's horrifying.
I just run
Dust
home
in
and
the
just
wind.
Masturbate the hell out of myself so just so I could just concentrate on homework.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Your son, do you think he... You have to wash his sheets, don't you?
Yeah, I do, but I think he's a shower guy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's probably better.
That's smart.
Yeah, I think
no, it's smart.
I was a shower guy.
Adolescent boys are stupid. I can remember my dad finding, like... in the middle of the carpet. Now, kids, there used to be carpet in every room instead of hardwood floors.
Right.
And there was a crusty patch in the middle of my carpet.
Oh, this is so upsetting.
And he looks at me, and my dad never talked to me, so it's like, next time use a towel. And I'm like, oh, so I run to the drugstore, and I'm reading comic books, I'm trying to relax. I come back, he's showing the crusty patch to my mom. Mm. And I'm like...
Great moment.
No.
Great moment in Hannes Finney's life.
Yeah, I'm like, what the fuck is going on?
One of those The More You Know sounds right now.
Da, 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 da. Yeah, CBS cares about your crusty patch. That is horrifying. I was looking at him like, you fucking asshole.
You made Anthony Bench over here blush. When you make a sound guy blush, you have said something that is dirty and filthy and bad.
It needs to be cleaned.
And it needs to be powdered.
And by the way, I don't recall, now that I told you the story, name? I don't recall
What's
anything.
Your mother's name?
What?
What's your mother's name?
Krista.
So your dad said like, Krista, come here. I got to show you something.
Look what your son did.
Hannes' room.
Rub his nose in it.
Look what your son, Hannes, did. I bet you're proud of your son, Hannes.
Like he could have just told her.
What did he do?
Look at him wasting his seed.
Well, first of all, how did it get? No, I didn't want to know.
I was probably rubbing my enormous genitals against the floor.
Okay.
I was probably fucking the carpet. Like your son would be doing right now if you had... Do you have any rubber plants at your house? Your son's cut a hole in a leaf and is fucking a rubber plant.
It is. Hannes, it's so true. You're so horny. I was so horny at 14. I would have fucked up like a toadstool. Anything that was soft enough, like a tree bark.
Between the mattress and the box spring.
I was like, please, God, somebody help me here. What's happening?
Yeah. No. Louis C.K., as a great comic, has a great bit about how he would fuck his refrigerator. It was something about having between the refrigerator and then the and then he says to the audience, he says, if you have a 10-year-old at home right now, he's fucking your whole house.
Basically, it's like a dog humping the chair of a leg or the leg of a man.
It's exactly like that. And
oh,
you're
God.
Like,
I'm so glad I had a girl. Or I have a girl.
Yeah, you have a girl.
I'm so glad.
And yeah, it's going to be horrifying with our mutual
Yeah, you have
nephew,
a girl. So, so when she starts dating, just think about everybody fucking their carpets.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, Jeff.
It's going to be great.
No, but you're going to be able to look. You've already you tell her things, and I think she'll be able to look. She's got other. She doesn't want to talk to you, and she won't want to talk to. She has other auntie like people to talk to.
You know what she said the other day? She walks in the room and she goes, "Damn, you cleaned up." I said, "Did you just say damn?" And she said, "I said you cleaned up." I said, "Alabama, you can't say damn. That's not a." Do you know what I mean?
If her name is Alabama, maybe she should say damn. It sort of sounds,
she goes,
sounds right.
Damn!
Damn, girl, you cleaned up.
She's seven.
Well, this is the problem
Ezra's
with
the
interweb.
Mouth.
I got to wrap this up right about now. All right, you guys. I'd like to thank everybody here at Sideshow Network, including Anthony Bench and
Damn, Anthony, you engineered the hell out of this thing.
Damn.
And of course, I'd like to thank John Thomas Griffith. You know, he's the guy that wrote the theme song, Follow Me.
Damn, I don't know who that is.
And on behalf of our storyteller tonight, Jeff Kahn, thank you, friend.
All right.
I sure
friend,
do appreciate it.
Comrade.
Look
we'll
at me. Look at me. Look at me. Yeah. Thank you.
Oh,
we'll see you on
yes.
the 405 and the 10 on the way home.
Yeah, I've got to go pick up my son
right
now
and
in
on
North
behalf
Hollywood.
Of Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.